Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
Well, wherever you are in the world, good to have your company. Overcast and just starting to drizzle at Sebring International Raceway. But this session is ready to go. This is the session that confuses everybody because it's an hour and 15 minutes long and everybody gets about an hour of that in some way, shape or form. Joining me in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre is Jeremy Shaw. Good afternoon to you, Jeremy. How are you?
Well, thank you very much indeed. Welcome to everybody who's joining us, whether there or anywhere around the world. And excited for the Sebring 12 Hours. It's March, right? So it's going to be Sebring 12
That's
Hours.
That's right. St. Patrick's Day in a couple of days. Oh, hang on. I better go and get a drop of the soft stuff. What a great idea. That's perfect for these kind of weather conditions. Shea Adam is our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock Reporter. Hello, Shea.
Hello, how are you?
You can look at the weather at Sebring, and it has just started to rain?
Yes, it has. I'm wearing my raincoat, even though I'm sitting inside, because, hey, we have to get into the swing of things here. We have to get into character. The rain is coming. Hurricane Etta has passed through Central Florida, is currently now off the coast of Jacksonville. But the feeder bands are sticking around, and we're getting a couple wayward showers. It's been beautiful all day today, but very, very muggy at Sebring International Raceway. So this rain that's about to come down has been long anticipated today. It's been a long time coming. But the good news is it's going to get out of the way fairly quickly. The bad news is it's going to get out of the way during this WeatherTech session.
And you can probably hear the wind blowing across the effect mics that we have around the circuit. Let's quickly, before the cars come out, let's do a bit of housekeeping here. Not for this session, but for the other Challenger series here this weekend. The IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship use the main pit. Everything else are using what we call the WEC pits on the back straight, on the Ullman straightaway. Is in fact what we did earlier in the year when we did the shorter race as well. And that will just change slightly the way timing and scoring works. So if you're following along on IMSA.com and the excellent Alcamel timing, you might just see one or two different things there. But in the substantive pit lane is where we find all the IMSA WeatherTech cars. Now, Shea, you've been watching what's going on this week. Let's go through some driver changes first of all, and the big one is a big name, not a long name in Bill, but quite a long name in Oberlin, but Bill, no Bill Power this weekend. Bill Power has been cut.
Bill Power is not going to be powering the 96 Turner Motorsport BMW here for the 86 running the Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring because he was in close contact with someone who did test positive for COVID. Now, Bill has not yet gotten his test results back. He's waiting for those. And in the meantime, he is self-isolating. 68th. I don't know why I said 86. Sorry. Oh, I was looking at the 86 Acura.
Of course you were. Yes, I know that.
Yeah, the pink one, it just takes over all of your ability to speak when you see that car. But for this race, no Bill Oberlin. Instead, Nick Yellily, professional factory BMW driver, has been drafted in. Now, you would think that he might have been in the area. Nope, BMW flying him over from England. He's set to arrive tonight, meaning his first laps of the weekend will be in morning warm-up right before the green flag of the race.
And our colleagues at Michelin are getting the rain tyres out as well, and it looks like there's some tyre changing going on down the pit lane. We wish Bill all the best. Nick Yellily, works driver, Jeremy, knows the car, but hasn't raced at Sebring before. Very accomplished driver, Nürburgring 24-hour winner. Very impressive. I've watched him for quite a long time, actually, through his early career, and he's taken to the GT3 cars as we get the green flag for the GTD bronze and silver drivers going out in the first moments here. It's a lot of trouble to go to get a driver from over in Europe.
Well, it really is. I mean, he's got to get his IMSA license organised, and apart from anything else. So it's a bizarre choice, to be perfectly honest. I mean, no disrespect. You know, Nick Yellerly, he's 29 years of age, was from Stafford originally in the UK, Midlands of the UK. And you know, he started off his career in the Opel World ranks, achieved next to nothing there. But of course, he was always in way over his head. He started off with Formula Renault. He'd only done a couple of years of karting before that, went straight to Formula Renault, then to GP3, for goodness sake, where you get very little track time, and then GP2. It was only really when he made the switch to GT cars in, I think it was just 2 or 3 years ago, he did the Porsche Carrera Cup in Germany, finished second in that championship. All of a sudden, he's become, you know, a much better, much more rounded and successful driver. So, but a bizarre choice. You know, not been here before. Kind of weird, to be perfectly honest. But clearly
knows
talented.
The car. Knows the car. That's the only thing I would say.
Yeah. But I mean, I would have thought there'd be plenty of people who've driven BMWs.
Well,
GT cars over here.
In fairness, Cameron Lawrence, who's been drafted into the GT4 part of Turner, he's driven the GT3 car in some of the endurance races, Sia.
Yeah.
And won at the 6 hours of Watkins Glen only a couple of years ago with the team. So, yeah, you're completely right, John. He would have been a very suitable choice. The only thing that I can think of as far as why they didn't do that would be that all three of their drivers for Turner Motorsport, because it's Robbie Foley and Dylan McAvern is the other two, all three of them would then be doing double duty with Michelin Pilot Challenge as well, and that would be a little bit steep. But that was the plan to begin with anyway.
Yeah,
Bill was going to be doing both races.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
He won't get here till tonight, so we'll miss the night practice session, which means he will not be eligible to take part for the final, 4 hours of the race.
That's a very good
point. Because you know, he's not listed on the drivers that have to take part in night practice tonight. I think that's probably because he wasn't even nominated by the time this sheet came out.
That's a fair point.
You know, in order to be eligible to drive it during the nighttime hours, he would have to take part, I believe, in this evening session. So that's going to leave everything down to the other two, which is fine. I mean, they're both, you know, plenty experienced, Robbie Foley and Dylan McAvern. But it seems kind of weird to have your factory driver not in
on the money laps. And Shea, you're at Sebring, and you've seen this time of the year. We always talk about the end of the race being the important time, make sure you've got a good car in the dark. We normally mean have a good car when it gets cooler in the dark, but here we really do mean dark. And dark, what, 5:15, 5:30?
It's been pretty darn dark at 5:30 in the afternoon every day here. And the funny thing is, actually, John, I went and did a little bit of digging because I was curious. This has been a very unusual year weather-wise in Florida. It's been a very wet, wet season, more so than normal. The weather that we were experiencing this weekend for the Sebring 12 hours is almost identical temperature-wise to the weather that we experienced during the race here in July. That should give you an idea of what Florida is like this year. It's still the middle of summer in all effects.
Right, we've got the cars out here. We'll give you some times when they start coming through. What other news do we have? All right, Bill Oberlin not here. We've now heard about that. What's the other stories? Let's start with the rest of GT Daytona here.
Okay, GT Daytona is fairly straightforward. Lexus have swapped their endurance drivers. Kyle Kirkwood was in the 12. He is now in the 14. And Michael De Quesada, who was in the 14, for Petit Le Mans, at least I should say, is now in the 12. And as far as losing Bill Oberlin, we have gained Joey Hand in the class of GTD. I had a good chat with Joey yesterday. He hasn't been in a race car since October of last year, and he has been drafted in to fill in for Alvaro Parent in the 57 MSR Heinricher Racing Acura. So Joey welcoming back, but he too is having to shake the rust off and learn a brand new car and team.
And we should say that a reason for quite a lot of these, and including Alvaro, driver changes, is there is not one, not two, not three, four major endurance events this weekend. Here at Sebring, we've got the WEC final round in Bahrain. We've got 1,000 Ks at Paul Ricard, and I'm forgetting one, and I can't remember where that is now. I think it's a GT Masters, isn't it, or something like that, as well. So a huge amount of resources being deployed by the manufacturers, and drivers having to either make choices if they're paying for their own racing or be told where they're going if they're being paid by the manufacturers. Right, anything else in GT, dear Tornish here?
Nothing else in GTD, but we do have stuff in GTLM and DPI.
Right, go for GTLM.
Very simple. Earl Bamber is a greedy boy. He doesn't want to drive one Porsche this weekend. He wants to drive two. So he is in the 911 and the 912. There's really no need. I mean, there's people, you know, willing and able with helmets to jump into cars, and you and I would do it and only saw off one limb. But yes, for Earl Bamber, I did a little bit of a driver time calculation because it is going to be a bit tricky. You can't do more than 4 hours in any 6 hour period. So we might see a situation tomorrow where Earl Bamber qualifies the 911.
That's not in each car. That's full stop.
Correct.
Yeah.
So in order to avoid that sort of confusion over the period of time that the race is, it might be beneficial for him to qualify the car that he does not normally drive.
Just a quick note, Jeremy just reminded me as well, we have got in GTD, the GRT Grasso Racing Lamborghini back. Sian Schotthorst is behind the wheel of that car at the moment. It is out there, so welcome back to them. We're seeing quite a few goodbyes this weekend, notably as well, including one particular driver in GT Daytona, and obviously a team and a manufacturer as well in GT Le Mans, excuse me.
Yes, we are bidding farewell to Oliver Gavin as a full season Corvette factory driver. He will no longer be participating in that championship full time. He is going to still be a part of the team. He is still going to be a brand ambassador, though, which is good news for everyone involved there. But this is Ollie Gavin's last hurrah. Seven times a winner at the 12 Hours of Sebring and the winner of the July race most recently. So a very accomplished driver. And as you rightly say, John, it will be a different paddock without him.
The two Porsches are disappearing. They've got special liveries this weekend that bear tribute to the support they've had down through the years. Stars and Stripes and Stripes and Stars.
Yes, Stars and Stripes on the 911 and Stripes and Stars on the 912. That's actually a good way to remember it. Very beautiful thank you tribute liveries for everything that they've accomplished in the United States with Core Autosport, of course, running the programs. But those two cars, whenever Porsche has run a tribute livery, they've done six races in tribute liveries. They've won four of them. So it has been a very good outing for them throughout the course of the years. But we will miss them. 75th GTLM start for this team this weekend. They're going to try and look for another Sebring 12-hour win.
Earlier on today, let's go to LMP2. Number 38 car ended the session early. Patrick Byrne losing it between 2 and 3 and hitting the wall backwards rather harder than he would like. There's some black bodywork on that car as the rain gets a little heavier here at Sebring International Raceway. But that car, Shea, is repaired and is... Has that car... that car can't go out at the moment, can it?
Yes,
it can go out there. It is out there.
Don Yount.
Yes, thank you.
But very confusingly, and I know that this is something that will catch all three of us out all weekend, all three of the drivers in that 38 Performance Tech car this weekend with blue and white helmets. So thanks, guys. Don Yount behind the wheel right now. He's the bronze driver. Patrick Byrne, who is making his LMP2 debut this weekend. He's got a lot of experience racing over in the Asian Le Mans Series with Guy Cosmo, and he has Guy Cosmo with him again this weekend. So we do have four prototypes for the LMP2 class this weekend. And Performance Tech looking like one of the strong ones.
Yeah, good to see that we have got three LMP2s this weekend. PR1 Matheson into Europol back again. And I mean, right behind the wheel of that. Oh, it's Patrick Kelly, by the way, behind the PR1 Matheson. He is quickest at the moment, 153.6. Then into Europol, then Performance Tech. Hello to Clark Cara de Flaming, who I know will be listening in, looking after the media and PR for Inter Europol. Let's move into DPI. Haven't seen those cars yet. They'll be out in a moment, around about 5 minutes. And again, there's some goodbyes there. We're saying goodbye to Acura Team Penske. They could go out in a real blaze of glory. We're going to lose one of the Mazdas as well. But big news coming through earlier on today that Chip Ganassi likely to be back with a Cadillac. Now, I know that you've been speaking to Cadillac to try and get to the bottom of this.
Yes, their main objective is to get through this weekend focusing on the championships that they have yet to win, because, of course, they are still well and truly alive, and not only the manufacturer's championship, but the driver's championship for the DPI category. So my contact did say that they are not prepared to make a statement just yet about next year. They're more interested in wrapping up this season first and trying to get those championships locked down, which is politically correct. And I don't hold her, I don't hold anything against her for saying that. But we are hearing a lot of those whispers, and they are getting louder and louder, that Chip Ganassi will be in the paddock next year with the Cadillac DPI. And to be honest, that would be wonderful, because we do miss Chip's presence around here. But the other big news coming out of the DPI class for next year that was announced just a couple hours ago was that the Whelen engineering crew will be bringing Felipe Nasr and Pipo Durrani back again for next year. Now, we have heard a little bit here and there about a potential second car that team would be running for the endurance races only. And those whispers, too, are getting, like the rain, much louder.
Yeah, very good. Very good. We'll do some more news from around the paddock with Shea Adam, our VP Racing Fuel pit and paddock reporter, in a wheel wide. We should say Gabby Chavez has jumped into the 31 and the Whelen car this weekend as an added driver, and Scott Andrews is in the number 85. Lots of GT Daytona news for next year as well. That's going to have a plethora of NSX Acuras next year. We'll give you some more details of that in a wee while. Coming down towards the end of this first 15 minutes, and Jeremy Shaw is keeping an eye on the times at IMSA Radio if you would like to get in touch with us, and some new Porsches potentially in GT Daytona as well. We'll get through that in a little while. Jeremy, what's going on in the times at the moment in this silver and bronze session?
A good question. That really is a fine question, I must admit.
I've got a 53.2 for Patrick Kelly and a 202.5 for Aaron Tielitz in the best of the GTDs, although he's in the pit lane at the moment. And I think that speaks to just perhaps how chilly it is out there with the track temperature. What would be a stormingly hot 31 Celsius here in the UK, air temperature 28 Celsius, 78% humidity, and the wind's dropped a little bit again now. So actually very pleasant, but very humid, very muggy, and with a little bit of rain dropping at the moment. Jeremy, what time should we be looking for in this session?
Yeah, we're going to be quite away from those lap times, but the lap records here were all set. Well, most of them were set last year. Dane Cameron was the prototype pole sitter in 2019 for the 12 hours in the Acura at 145.8. The fastest lap in the race was by the Mazda of Harry Ticknell at 147.4. The only cars we've got out there at the moment are GTDs and LMP2s. The lap record in qualifying for LMP2 is Matt McMurray at 149.7, so we're still 3 or 4 seconds away from that. And in GT Daytona, the qualifying lap record is 158.7. The race lap record was a 2:06. But if we just go back a few months till July this year, then it's kind of a different story. We didn't get anywhere near any of the lap records in July, apart from the GTLM qualifying lap record, which was set by Jordan Taylor in a Corvette at 155.6. And in the LMP2s in race trim, the fastest lap was Gustavo Menezes, as is, at a 149.6.
Let's hope he never gets into a Lexus as well. Otherwise, you're
he was. He did.
I know. We've got the wiper going on the light blue number 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche going through turn one at the moment. Behind the wheel of that car at the moment is Jan Heerlen, and he has got the wiper just on its lowest setting as we get the green flag for the pro classes. Kreventic, 12 Hours of Mugello, that's the other long distance race this weekend. Apologies to Ivo Breukers and the rest of the Kreventic team for that slipping my mind. That's Friday and Saturday as well. Everything is Friday and Saturday as well this week, with the WEC, of course, qualifying on Friday and racing on Saturday in Bahrain. That country just gone into mourning with the death of its prime minister, who's been in office for 40 years or so. So 3 days of official mourning in Bahrain, but the WEC will continue on its schedule. We've got Mugello 12 Hours starting, qualifying and starting on Friday and finishing on Saturday. And of course, here at IMSA, we are racing on Friday for all the Challenger Series and then Saturday. And it is the 1000K at Ricard. And I actually don't know when that one is running, whether it's running Saturday or Sunday. But very impressive that they've managed to get that off in France at the moment with the state of lockdown there. So plenty to choose from this weekend, and a couple of choices on the Radio Show Limited network of channels, us here on RS2. And tomorrow, an absolutely packed Fast Friday with the majority of the sessions free to air in sound and vision as well to everyone. Only in the States are you going to miss out on the Alan J 120 Michelin Pilot Challenge in free-to-air, uninterrupted sound and vision. But, of course, everything on IMSA Radio. And then, of course, the big race on Saturday. And even if you are in the States, don't forget you can get qualifying for IMSA WeatherTech on Friday. So a lot of racing to get in. It's two Porsche races, two Lambo races, a partridge in a pear tree, and the qualifying for WeatherTech, and the feature race on Fast Friday is the Alan J 120 for the Michelin Pilot Challenge Series finale. So Patrick Kelly then into the pits with a 53.2 will be the fastest for the moment for LMP2, ahead by a margin. Now Navin Rao in second place, 3.2 seconds behind, and then a further 8 tenths back to John Ferrano for the Orica of Tower Motorsports by Starworks, and then another couple of tenths further back, Don Yount for that. There we go. They can stay out now, they don't have to come back in, but we have this middle part of the session now, Jeremy, where it's an all skate, so the lesser experienced drivers have had their times to themselves to dial themselves in. Now they can be out there dealing with the faster traffic should they so desire.
Yes indeed, and I think it's going to be pretty busy. Not an awful lot of track time here this weekend for the reconstituted 12 hours. We've just got we had one session earlier today when the fastest time was set by Elio Castro Neves at 149.3 in the championship leading car number 7 Acura. And remarkable to see that car should be leading the championship, having started off the season so appallingly. Yes. With I think 2 8th places and a 7th in the first 3 races of the season, so it was a distant last in the points, and now lead by 2 points coming into this weekend's finale, so that's pretty remarkable. And then we've got another. Well, tonight there's the night practice session, which is an hour and a half. So, you know, three and a half hours practice is a pretty goodly amount, but all in one day, of course.
Yeah.
But still, you want to get as much track time as you can. And you talk about the weather conditions. Doesn't seem to be any rain on the surface at the moment. Shay can probably correct me on that one, but it looks to be dry at the moment. But there's certainly threats of where it rain all the way through tomorrow as well, are there not? So yeah. I think any opportunity to get out there, the teams are going to take.
And another weather front to come through south and certainly western, possibly central Florida over the weekend. The question is when it arrives. I did notice that the rearranged Masters up at Augusta National was held earlier on today for bad weather and the threat of lightning in the air. That's where Tropical Storm Eta has made its way to and is blowing through that sort of area, but the risen of the storm front still to come through, and that's what we've all got our fingers crossed to, that will either blow through or not arrive until Sunday. Sorry for those of you who might have to be breaking down here at Sebring on Sunday. Felipe Nasr, 151.712, goes to the top ahead of Ryan Hunter-Reay, who was there for a moment. Before that, it was Tristan Vautier and Ricky Taylor who were quickest. So we're down into the high 1 minute 51s for Felipe in the 31 car. We've got in GT Le Mans, Antonio Garcia, Corvette Racing, number three in 10th overall and leading that category. Champions elect. Possibly shouldn't say that at the moment. But nope. They are pretty much the champions, providing they don't get any points taken away from them. No, I'm just going to leave that right now. Augusto Farfus for the BMW in second at the moment in GT Le Mans. And in GT Daytona, it is Ryan Hardwick aboard the Wright Motorsports Porsche who had has the best time. He's just gone back out. I'm not sure whether it was Ryan who set that time. Aaron Tielitz in second for Lexus, number 14. And in third, it is the Michael de Quesada in Ian Vassar-Sullivan's Lexus as well. I think it was Jan Heerlen who set the time in the Porsche in that early session. We are still, what, 2 or 3 minutes away from being able to put the Pro drivers in the GT Daytonas, because the first half an hour is reserved for silver and bronze. It's just they have the track to themselves for the first 15 minutes. Through comes the final, through the final corner for the number 31, Felipe Nasr. Hunter-Reay back to second. And Ricky Taylor goes to the top now with a 49.3. Time's beginning to come down, Jeremy. Looks like people are dialing themselves in here.
Yeah, indeed. And yeah, that is a good time there. 49.363, which is precisely 0.003 of a second away from the time that his teammate, Delio Castroneves, set this morning. So that's a very good lap time now, with still some sort of spots of rain in the air, perhaps. But I think conditions now fairly good. That'll brought the track temperature down a little bit, which is certainly going to help. Although the windscreen wiper, I think, was going on the number 31 Cadillac. But 149.2 now for Ricky Taylor, so it goes faster again. That is the new best time of the day then. And it's getting closer to lap record territory for the number 7 car. As I say, the qualifying lap record was 145.8, the fastest lap was a 147.4, Harry Tinknell setting that time. So a couple of seconds away from that at the moment.
Yeah, and notes on Mazda for next year. Just one car in the prototype category share, but with a fairly stellar driving lineup for that that DPI.
I do feel bad for their golf budgets next year, because they are going to go through the roof. Harry Tinknell and Oliver Jarvis have been spending quite a bit of time in Florida in between these last couple of races, and they've been spending a lot of time out on the golf course because that's a sport that they both enjoy also. So that might actually cost them more money to both stay drivers of Mazda for next year. They will be joined by Jonathan Bomarito as the endurance driver in that singular Mazda that will be running next year in the DPI category. And Tristan Nunez will be staying on, but not in any driving role, in more of an ambassadorial role and doing more things with Multimatic behind the scenes.
And as we said, a possibility of more DPIs coming in. We know that Meyer Shank Racing, the Wayne Taylor organisation, Connick Minolta, currently running the number 10 glossy black car. They'll both have Acuras next year, taking over the cars that have been run to this point exclusively by Acura team Penske. Penske step away from the IMSA championship, but the cars remain in other teams' hands. I do believe that the plan is that they will both get two cars, those two teams, next year, but the idea would be to have one as a primary and one as a spare or a backup, I don't think either of those teams at the moment, from what we've heard from their principals, are at the moment at least thinking of running two cars, certainly not for the full season. More to come, I suspect, on that as we get through what is going to be quite a short, close season. Although, in fairness, Jeremy, we have been here with various constituent parts and running at what was called the Michelin Encore, which originally was an idea to get people used to the Michelin rubber in the transition period between the previous tyre manufacturer and moving into Michelin, what, a couple of seasons ago, but actually sort of went so well that they did it again, and that was round about this time of the year. So we have had it into teams down here at Sebring before at this time of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was the equivalent, this equivalent weekend, you're right, the last couple of years. So the teams are used to doing either that or doing testing down here this time of year. So it certainly isn't unusual for many of the teams to be here. But certainly, the prototypes were not part of the Michelin Encore the last couple of years, nor were GTLM. So, I think it's great to have this the event. You know, I'm just thrilled that we're going to get the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring presented by Advanced Auto Parts on the schedule this season, and also great to have a good number of fans here as well. Just looking at trackside here, there seems to be a pretty good turnout of fans despite all the shenanigans that the country has been going through this year. I think actually probably because of, in actual fact, because Florida, I think as hard as had it, well, the last couple of months has been a bit of acknowledgement of the global pandemic, it would appear, which is great news for fans as long as they're being socially distanced, which they are, of course, this weekend for the large part.
Yeah, and our thoughts, of course, with anybody who have been adversely affected, or families, friends been adversely affected by what's going on. We try not to talk too much about the COVID-19 pandemic, because it's everywhere, isn't it, at the moment, and everybody's talking about it a lot. And it's not because we don't think it's happening, quite the reverse. We know it is. We know what the effect it's had on our sport, both the sporting side and the business side of our sport. But I don't think any of us feel the need to go through it time and time again. I have had a couple of tweets about that, and so I'm going to say this and explain it here. That we're trying to cover a bit of sport here and perhaps give a little alternative to everything else that's going on in the world at the moment. That's not to say that we don't acknowledge it, quite the reverse. Our family's been touched by it, with a couple of deaths on Eve's side of the family from COVID. But as I say, we're trying to provide a little bit of an alternative and a little bit of a, maybe a safe space is the right way to describe it, and just enjoy our motor racing as something that's been an unexpected constant this year, because it did look for a wee while that we weren't going to be able to get that in any of the sports this year. It's IMSA Radio. We're on RS2 around the world. Hello to you if you're at Sebring International Raceway as well, and thanks again to Tyler and the rest of the IMSA technical team on site for making sure that our commentary is being pumped out at the circuit. At IMSA Radio, if you'd like to get in touch with us. Some improvements to the times have seen Philippe Nasse go back to the top of the charts, Jeremy.
Indeed, a 148.8 for Philippe Nasse, so that's about almost 4 cents quicker than Ricky Taylor's time in the Acura a little while ago. So number 31 from number 7. There's, of course, two of the championship contenders coming into this final race of the season. It's Elio Castroneves and Ricky Taylor in at number 7 car that lead by just 2 points over Renko van der Zander and Ryan Briscoe in number 10 car, which is currently fourth fastest in this session. And another 7 points behind in third position is Pipa Durrani, who, of course, is co-driving with Felipe Nasser and Gabby Chavez this weekend, number 31 car. So certainly it's game on in the championship battle for DPI. Really, whichever the number 10 or 7 cars finishes ahead of the other, It's not quite that simple, actually. But if one of them wins, if one of them wins, that either of them wins, then it is the champ. They will win the championship. That's probably that. That's an easy way to put it. For the number 31 team, for Pipo Durrani, he's going to need some help. Because as a result of that accident at Petit Le Mans a few weeks ago, that cost him valuable ground to both of the other two contenders. Whereas he might have had the championship lead, he ended up emphatically not with the championship lead. And so they're going to need some help. They trail by 9 points going into the finale.
Got a slow car on the back straight. It's one of the LMP2 cars. It's the Starworks, the Tower Motorsports by Starworks car, and that has come to a grinding halt for John Ferrano and has brought out a red flag immediately. John was staying over to the right hand side. He's just, I think, got past the exit from the back straight pits, that what we call the WEC, the World Endurance Championship pits, and it is sitting. Yeah, he didn't actually, he's not even that far down, he's about a quarter of the way down the back straight, and that car has no fire at all, and will need a tow. Now the good news is they can pull that car in through the pits. Actually, it doesn't matter. They can just whizz back round down through turn 17. Just a note for those of you, and hello by the way to Steph Neff, who is at the track, not sure where you are. She's tweeted at IMSA Radio, says, I know I saw these cars in July, but I really missed them. And Shay, I agree with what you said about the Porsche liveries, prefer the red, but that's my favourite colour. Steph and everybody else at the track, WWOJ 99.1 FM for the race at the weekend, just in case that weather is a bit dodgy and you need to get undercover or in your car. And WWOJ once again will be looking after us and loaning us their airwaves on Saturday. XM Sirius as well, Sirius XM, excuse me, will have the full race uninterrupted there as well. And I'll get you the channels for that for Saturday as well, just so you can keep in touch with what's going on. Hello to Moni Elysium, tuned in on a lunch break. I can't wait to hear the race coverage this weekend. Says, can you say hello to everybody who is at turn two? I'm missing my turn two crew racing family. Hashtag Sebring12 at IMSA Radio if you want to get in touch with us. So just over 40 minutes to go. Haven't talked about GT Daytona for a while. GRT Grasso Racing Team Lamborghini with a 202.3 for Steen Schotthorst. Fastest ahead of Ryan Hardwick for Wright Motorsport in the 16 car. Then Aaron Tielitz for Ian Vassar-Sullivan. Actually, those are the drivers who were in the cars when they came at the pits, not necessarily who set the times. Then it's the second of the Lexus from Ian Vassar-Sullivan. That's the 12 car. Then it's Turner Motorsports number 96 without Bill Oberlin this weekend. So Dylan McEvan on duty there for the moment, sharing with Robbie Fawley. They will be supplemented and bolstered by Nick Yellerly, Works BMW driver and winner of the Nürburgring 24 this year. Ian James is sixth for Heart of Racing Team Aston Martin Vantage number 23. In GT Le Mans, it's Corvette number 3 from Porsche 911, from BMW 24, then Corvette number 4, then Porsche 912, then so hang on, we've got Corvette, Porsche, BMW, Corvette, Porsche, BMW, and it's 3, 9, 11, 24 from 4, 9, 12 and 25. Okay, that's not the kind of symmetry that I normally expect, but I'm quite happy with that. I'm fine. BMW next year, RLL, we're not sure yet whether they'll be doing the full season or just the long races, but there has been no announcement either way, and there will. It's unlikely that that will come until the BMW Race of Champions, which is early December. And that is absolutely standard practice, by the way, so don't read anything into that. In LMP2, it is PR1 Matheson, the 52 car, with a 153.2 that leads from Inter Europol with a 156.2. From Tower Motorsports, that's the car that stopped, with a 156.9. From Performance Tech with a 157.2. green flag is back out. And at the top of the shop, 31, Whelan, 148.8 by almost 4/10 of a second from Acura Team Penske number 7 with a 49.2. 49.4 for Ollie Platt for Mazda Motorsports 77. Scott Dixon brought in the number 10, Konica Minolta Cadillac. That car's best of 49.8. Everybody else is 150 and above. And that would be headed by, in fifth, the 55 of Ryan Hunter-Reay. That's the Mazda. Then the number 5 of Mustang Sampling. Then the, that's a Cadillac, of course. Then the 85 Cadillac of JDC. And that's, where's Juan Montoya? Oh, he's down below the LMP2 for the number 6 car, Acura Team Penske, in what is that? That is 8th position for that car. Back to Green Flag Racing. Oh, Green Flag Free Practice, should I say, Jeremy Shaw.
Yes, just to have a look down the... This, of course, it's a complicated race this way in terms of the championship rounds. It's the 9th round for DPI, the 6th round for LMP2, the 11th round for GTLM, and the 10th for GT Daytona. It's also the final round for all of those championships this weekend. It's also the final round of the 4-round IMSA Michelin Endurance Cup.
Ah, good point.
And, as usual, the points will be awarded not only at the end of the race at 12 hours, but also at after 4 hours and after 8 hours. And to just look at the championships in each of those classes, it's sort of interesting. The number 10 team leads in DPI, Ryan Briscoe and Rega van der Zande. They lead by 5 points over number 31 team, which basically means that that's game on there, very much so. In the LMP2 category, that's already been won by PR1 Matheson Motorsports, but it gets much more interesting, I think, in GTLM, because number 24 BMW, Jesse Krohn and John Edwards lead the way there by 6 points over the number 911 Porsche, which basically means if the BMW car number 24 can get maximum points, which is only 5, at any of the 3 points during this race, 4 hours, 8 hours or 12 hours, that'll be enough to clinch it for them. Less so in the Manufacturers' Championship, because there's only 4 points in between BMW and Porsche. Corvette, surprisingly, despite the season, they have a kind of nowhere in the Michelin Endurance Cup. And then moving on to GTD, Brian Sellers, Madison Snow, Corey Lewis, number 48, Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini. They've got a pretty commanding 9-point edge over, again, 3 cars, actually. Number 86, Meyer Shank Racing with Kerb Agajian in Acura. Number 63, Scuderia Corsa Ferrari. And number 44, GRT Magnus Lamborghini. They're all tied on 26. Basically, what needs to happen there, if Paul Miller Racing can score, can be in the top 3 in one of those 3 junctions during the race, that'll be enough to clinch it for them. So they're very much in command of the points in the Michelin Endurance Cup for GTD.
Thank you, Jeremy, and I'm so pleased you've got to look after that and not me, frankly, because we'll need to get you a new abacus otherwise. We've got one on order for you for next year with a lot of different beads on it. I wish I'd not started that. I really do.
Talk about if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, that's a classic.
Oh, yeah, I know. A million points. 1 million points to next year. We're adding, we're timesing everything by 10. I'm not sure whether the US is heading into the European Union or something.
Even NASCAR went away from that sort of that having gazillion points several years ago.
Some of the things that I do like, I have to say, there's some points for qualifying next year that might make things a bit tasty and add things up. And I've got to really sit down and work that out during the long, dark nights of European winter with nothing but the Big Bash to watch. Oh, no, we've got an England tour of South Africa coming up as well, haven't we, in cricket? So perhaps.
perhaps.
Yeah, that's something I plan to do, actually, sit down and figure out whether the points would be any different if we had all those things.
But, excellent.
A busy time.
Excellent. Yeah. Like that idea, Jeremy. Like that sounds like a slightly chilly Californian evening with a nice log fire on and a half a bottle of red. And some pens and pencils.
I probably can't do it with the alcohol. That's the bad news.
Aww. Well, you should try.
But I tell you what, I shall make up after I finish. I can tell you.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent stuff. You're listening to IMSA Radio. It's Around the Track and Around the World. Good to have your company. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on this busy weekend. Thursday night, bit of extra coverage for you. Thursday night in Europe, just after 8 p.m. in the UK, 9:15 in Central Europe. Wish you all the best wherever you are in the world in these difficult times. Here's how it stands. It's Whelan Engineering in the pits with Felipe Nasr having set a best time of 1:48.339 at the moment. And then Mustang sampling second. Tristan Vautier back out in the number five car. And then it's Alexander Rossi for Acura Team Penske. So two Cadillacs now ahead of the first of the Acuras. Then Konik Minolta Cadillac in the hands of Scott Dixon. Nasr, Vautier, Rossi, Dixon, Pla, Hunter Rear. Your top six. That, Mr. Shaw, is a bit of quality.
Yeah, there's no shortage of quality, is there, in this championship. There might only be eight DPI cars, but the quality of drivers really is fantastic. They always provide great racing. And, you know, it's interesting. Shay talked about it, I think, a little bit earlier on, that Felipe Nasr and Pipo Durrani have already been signed up again for next year, that number 31 car. Interesting, they're going to be joined by Mike Conway for all of the long distance races next year. So that's certainly a feather in the cap, of course, with Philippe Albuquerque already otherwise engaged this weekend, along, as you were talking about, John, a little while ago, with the Bahrain WEC. So he will not be back with that team for next year, but we hear he is going to be back on a full-time basis in a different car.
Yeah, very good. And we've still got half an hour in total here. Remember, the last 15 minutes are the pro classes only. So that will clear things off a little bit and possibly give one or two of the drivers a chance to go. Oh, huge black lines of Michelin rubber coming from the back of Ryan Hunter-Reay in the 55 Mazda there as he was going through, going out of turn seven. And just going round the outside of the 48. That's the 44 Lamborghini there. That's the Grasser team who are at the JRT Magnus team in Lamborghini. 48 car did get parked a little bit earlier on here for an attractor, a penalty. That's the word I'm thinking of.
Yes.
That was accrued from the earlier session, though. So pit lane speeding.
Yeah, it was admirable too. 13 kilometers an hour over the
Excellent.
Limit, which was actually, it happened at the end of the last session, so they didn't get an opportunity to serve the penalty before the session went checkered. But Brian Sellers said, and I quote, "It wasn't the whole way down." He was trying to defend himself there, to which I said, "Yeah, but if you're speeding and a cop pulls you over and you say, but I was only going 20 over for a little while, he's still going to give you a ticket."
Yeah. Absolutely right. It wasn't the whole journey, officer. I've been driving
exactly.
250 miles. It's only the last 6 miles I've been speeding. Yeah, not going to work, I don't think. Oh, very good. Very good. Good to see the spectators being sensible around the track. A lot of people down there at... Turn 6 beside the Corvette Bridge. That's where Steph Neff was talking to us earlier on the left-hand side of, as the drivers go by. That's the hotel side, which is good to see quite a few people gathering down there. bit early. Did we mention Neil Yanni earlier on, Shea?
No, I think I forgot to say that. Neil Yanni's been drafted in to drive the 912 Porsche alongside Bam Thor. And he, it's sort of an interesting decision as far as that goes, because Neil has a great deal of experience in this car, in the Porsche 919 RSR, but it's all from testing. He's never actually raced the GT car before, so this is a new experience. Currently sitting down in the sixth position, 2.1 seconds off the pace. I'm a little surprised to see Neil that far down.
Hmm. I'm a very accomplished driver, and knows his way around Porsches, of course. But again, a function of all the racing this weekend. But good to see Neil back in a paddock of an IMSA paddock. And no, I mean, he's raced here at Sebring before, hasn't he, Jeremy?
Been on the pole position here before, yeah. In the Rebellion car, remember, a few years ago, 2017, I think it was. He hasn't done many races in the in this championship. Neil, he's only raced in a total of two events. Those two races at the beginning of that 2017 season. They didn't get the finishes deserved, but the car was certainly fast, and as I say, had the pole position here at Sebring. So you know, he's got plenty of experience here. He's raced here in the WC as well, so yeah, huge experience driver, and yeah, on Porsche's books still, and yeah, was available because most of our other drivers were.
That's a fair point.
I think actually this is his first ever race in a GT car, believe it or not. But he has done, I believe, quite a bit of testing in this RSR to get, not necessarily to get ready for here, but testing in that car.
They do look great, both of the Porsches. And as a mad football supporter in so many different connotations of the word mad, my team plays in red and white stripes, so I've got to say the 912 is my favourite. I think that looks absolutely stunning. It's another die cast I need. Hello Porsche USA, hello Scott Bartlett. I know you're going to have some done. Still waiting for me Coca-Cola one as well, just, you know. What we got left, just under half an hour still to go. Doesn't time fly when you're enjoying yourself? Hello to Sarah and Martin Rigby up in Crewe in the north west of England, home of Bentley Motors, of course, and good to know that they are listening in wherever you are around the world. Welcome. Plenty of ways to tune in this weekend. IMSA Radio bringing you the majority of coverage, although we will be linking up in sound and vision on Fast Friday tomorrow. Pretty much everything we do tomorrow will have a video component. The Porsche and Lamborghini races, the qualifying for IMSA WeatherTech, all available without block, without interruption, and without any money having to change hands. If you're outside the US, then the Alan J120 for Michelin Pilot, also all free and uninterrupted on IMSA TV and our syndications around the world for that. Here in the States, that's not available to you, that service. So your best bet if you are wanting to watch that is, without paying any money over, is to wait for the highlights on NBCSN, which will come out in a week or so. And then on Saturday, of course, it's NBCSN for the Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring, presented by Advance Auto Parts if you're here in the US. And if you're outside the US, then we've got the full coverage for you without any breaks. Flag to flag, and that will be on IMSA TV. There are a number of things that you can get in the States, by the way, on IMSA TV, including some onboards and, of course, the timing. And we've got SiriusXM if you're in the US, and there's the audio, which is never blocked and never charged for either. That's always a free gratis service. And have we worked out yet, Shea, whose turn is it to bring out the yellow full course caution at somewhere after about 7:30, 7:40 this weekend? Because we've got a SpaceX Falcon 9 crewed launch at 7:49 local.
Well, John, isn't that why I'm on site? Am I not going to throw this rubber chicken on the track and cause a yellow so we can all watch the rocket launch?
If a rubber chicken arrives on the track at any time, Bob Barfield is going to come and hunt you down. You know that, don't you? And John Downey.
Oh, bring it. That would be so much fun. Yeah, well, it worked out the last time that we had a caution when a rocket was launching, and it was the most amazing thing, seeing everybody standing up on the pit wall waiting for their cars to come in, and then all of a sudden this bright, shiny object off at about 1 o'clock from the pit lane just started rising slowly, and everybody completely forgot that we were in the middle of a race. They forgot that there were pit stops coming up and they had to be focused. We were all just amazed at what this country has done for space exploration, and now we get that opportunity again this weekend. It's one of those things that really gives you goosebumps when you think about it.
We'll hope that that happens. Actually, the weather may not be wonderful for that, but we're hoping that we will see the Crew Dragon spacecraft on board the Falcon 9 SpaceX rocket. I've got a feeling it's three NASA astronauts. Yes, it is. Mike Hopkins, Victor Glover, and Shannon Walker, and Soichi Noguchi from the Japan Aerospace Exploration Society, JAXA. 7:49 Eastern on Saturday from 39A, the launch complex 39A at Kennedy. That is on Saturday, and if we get the opportunity, we'll talk you through that as well, because we're all nerds for that kind of technology, aren't we? As usual, respect the bumps here at Sebring and the final corner. It's not smoothed out down through the years, Jeremy. I think it's fair to say at sunset under the bridge, has it?
No, it hasn't. You're right. I believe the front stretch has never been repaved back for its old days as Hendricks Field. And so it is. It's plenty bumpy down there. And in turn 17, yeah, that's a great. It's just a great challenge. You know, some people don't like it because it is so treacherous through there. And it seems like it changes character every time you go across, go around that corner. But it is a great challenge, and it's certainly a very dangerous part of the racetrack as well. We've seen a lot of incidents down there, and we've just got to hope there aren't any this weekend.
Yeah, you can be just driving through there, virtually minding your own business, and all of a sudden the car moves 6 or 7 inches to the left. And if you're side by side with somebody, we've seen that in the past, Jeremy, end rather badly. And actually, not be anybody's fault, and I mean that genuinely. If you catch one of those bumps wrong and the suspension is going down when it's meant to be going up, or going up when it's meant to be going down, you just hop across a little bit. Flying Lizard versus the Corvette versus, was it the Tequila Patron, the Ferrari, the ESM car, they all came together there, and that didn't end well. And we've seen people upside down on the exit of that corner as well.
Yes, it's been ugly.
Have you raced here, Jeremy?
Not on the full circuit, actually, no. I haven't, but I have raced around Sunset. Yes, I've done various different configurations around here, but I've never raced on the full track all at once.
I've done some fast laps around here. Most notably, my first ever laps were with Tom Christensen in an RS5, I think it was.
I remember that.
It's still available. If you look up Hindhoff Christensen, and that was a ZF or ZF race reporter, and there's a long version which is worth seeking out if you can. And I'm blaming Alan McNish, because he was the one who delivered me the car and said, "Are you driving?" "Yes." "Tom hates understeer, so induce as much understeer as you can and it will freak him out." Find out how much it freaked him out by going looking at that on your favourite video platform. ZF or ZF race reporter Christensen Hindhoff. It's worth 10 minutes of your time. It was fun. McNish, your fault. Alan, who will be part of the crew in Bahrain this weekend, of course, for the finale of the WEC 8-hour race down there. Meantime, GRT Grasser Racing team on top of the times, with Richard Highstand behind the wheel now with the number 11 from another Lamborghini, Paul Miller Racing and Brian Sellers. 2023, 2024, then a Porsche, Wright Motorsports. That's been, I think, Ryan Hardwick at the wheel of that for this whole session. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't seen anybody next to that. Then Kyle Kirkwood for... Oh, Jan Hale had started, didn't he? Of course he did. Thank you, shit. Well corrected. Then Kyle Kirkwood behind the wheel of the first of two in Vanessa Sullivan Lexus. 14 from 12. Top six is an Acura in the hands of... Super Mario Farmbacker, and those three separated by a tenth here, a couple of tenths there, or nothing at all. In GTLM, 9.11.3.24, 25.4.9.12. So, all right, that's even more spooky because they've changed around but still managed to stay in number order within their teams. So Porsche, Corvette, BMW, BMW, Corvette, Porsche. So we've got a palindromic situation in GT Le Mans at the moment. I've got one of those word a day lavatory rolls, you know, like Joey and Friends. It's, you know, one of those things. So that's what's happening in GT Le Mans. LMP2, it's PR1 from Inter-Europol, from Tower, from Performance Tech. And Gabby Chavez now on top, or at least behind the wheel of the car that's on top of the stack, Jeremy, with Acura now back in a second, courtesy of a time that Alex Rossi put in and splits the two Cadillacs, Chavez and Vautier, with Scott Dixon still in fourth position.
Yes, Rossi set that time just before he came back into the pit lane in that number seven car. So Gabby Chavez... is in the number 31 car at the moment, but it's, as you say, Felipe Nasr who set the fastest time, and 448.3, so still a way away from any sort of lap record times there. The lap record again, well, the race lap record are 147.4, so we're still a full second outside of that, which is interesting. We had a fair bit of track time today. I would have expected to get a bit closer. To that, the fastest lap though in the race here back in July was Pippo Durrani in that number 31 car at 147.6. So you know, it's the second session of the day for these guys, isn't it? So I would certainly expect the times a little bit quicker than that. But of course, it is pretty muggy, I believe, here track conditions. So not track conditions, certainly not at their best, Joe.
Carol Brink has found that Christensen. Video has just been retweeted out on at IMSA Radio and at Specutainment. That may have been my finest moment ever behind the wheel of a car on a track. Nothing to do with racing, but it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. And Tom's never let me forget it either. I'm still not sure whether he knows it was all McNish's fault, to be honest. Coming down to the last minute or so, Shea, for the GT Daytonas.
We mentioned Gabby Chavez just a couple of moments ago, and something really funny about him is he's still out on the track and will not have to park for the final 15 minutes. He will get to stay out there with no traffic. But Gabby is doing double duty this weekend, also trying to go for the TCR Championship in the Michelin Pilot Challenge, which means that he is driving in the fastest cars this weekend in DPI and the slowest cars this weekend on track in TCR. There's about a 30-second a lap difference in times between the DPI and the TCR. So that's definitely an example of you really don't want to get your braking points wrong.
Yes. Still to come, evening practice, which will be darkness practice here. And that will be very important because 4 and a bit hours of this race will be in darkness on Saturday night, with the change in the time of year. And I would think, Jeremy, that there are, as Jeremy, you mentioned, there is a list of drivers who are already qualified for nighttime running. But I do think that the teams will want to get out and see what the track is like. I mean, they're out now, and this is good because we'll be racing at this time of day on Saturday. Qualifying would have been, a little bit different time to this, but not that much. But on the nighttime sessions, they'll want to get out and find some data and make sure, I mean, daft things, make sure that the headlights are pointing in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, the headlights are a lot more sophisticated than they used to be back in the old days, certainly. They'll be racing at every time of the day tomorrow, won't they?
They will, yeah.
12-hour race. So it's, you know, it's, but it, it, you know, these, it's, we're expecting changing track conditions, I think, for tomorrow. This afternoon's been, there are a few sprinkles early on in the session, but there's certainly some spots of blue sky now. And it, I think the threat of rain at the moment, I think, seems to have eased. So it's been a pretty much all dry session this afternoon, and that's certainly good news for all these teams. That's going to be the best preparation, but it's going to be good for them to get out tonight once the sun sets as well.
That's Jeremy Shaw. He's with me in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Shea Adam is our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter. The little splash of rain that we had earlier on hasn't really affected things. We did have wipers on earlier, but that seems to have blown through. Still 28 Celsius in the air, 31 on the track, so that's pretty much exactly as it was when we started about an hour ago for this free practice two session for the final round of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, the 68th annual Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring. Hello, if you are just joining us, either at the circuit side at Sebring International Raceway, the home of endurance racing in America and the original venue for the USGP, of course, going back into the 1950s. Circuits, well, if this concrete particularly could talk, what tales it could tell. Phenomenal amount of history here down through the years, and great that we have managed to keep top class endurance racing in particular here at Sebring International Raceway. And congrats to everybody at the track as well as IMSA for making sure this event, not necessarily at its normal time, but it is still going to run. And the additional short race that we had earlier in the year in July, that was an interesting one as well. Very different atmosphere again, and a different character to the race. We'll see how that changes on Saturday with the change in time of year, and particularly with that darkness we mentioned earlier on. Right, now we should just have by now, Jeremy, the two pro classes on the track, DPIs and GT Le Mans. So we've about half of the cars, just under half the cars in the field are left for the last 15 minutes. We might see one or two little qualifying simulations here. Just waiting for the number 74 AMG to come in through turn one. Oh, huge amount of bouncing from the Ollie Jarvis driven Mazda number 77. Scraping the car on the ground there as it went through the left-hander at turn one. Real commitment Jeremy needed there in these big downforce creating DPIs. That's a very quick corner now, turn one.
Well, it really is. Yeah, I mean, it's always been a fast corner, and it's super dangerous. I mean, it really is. It's the car can get offline there. It gets thrown around through the bumps. Yeah, Multimatic, this team that runs the Mazdas, they're pretty confident. They reckon their shock absorber program is the best in the world, and so they're pretty confident that the Mazda can handle the bumps through there better than any other prototypes. We will see, but certainly it is a daunting corner because it's really, really quick.
And just to prove that a moment or two ago, the 912 Porsche Lawrence Vanter just taking to the clear on the exit and throwing up a bit of dust, quite a lot of dust actually, and managing to hold it steady though through the kink at turn two and into turn three. Michelin's doing a bit of rally crossing there, and seemingly at least none the worse for that, Jeremy, but that will have woken up Lawrence.
Yeah, you know, it's been an eventful season, hasn't it, for the Porsche team?
Yeah.
It was looking pretty pear-shaped a few weeks ago, but of course Porsche has won each of the last two races, both of their cars have now won one race, which means that all of the cars in GTLM have won at least one race this season, with that win last time out for the second of the Porsches. So that's kind of cool, isn't it? It's not often you can say that all of the cars in the class have won at least one race during the year.
I think I read in the Michelin notes that came my way earlier on this week that this season, out of I think 15 manufacturers that are represented across all of the IMSA categories, 13 of them have had wins. It was 13 or 12, I can't remember, but it was a huge percentage of the manufacturers have had a win, even if it was a class win, across all of the IMSA classes this year, which is an extraordinary statistic in terms of how close it is. Yeah,
I'm counting.
it's pretty. It's certainly pretty cool. And if you just look at the, certainly in GTLM and DPI, you know, all the manufacturers have won. The interesting thing really to me is GTD, because we've had a total of 10 different manufacturers. McLaren, of course, they're only doing the shorter races. So McLaren's win comes in the Mission and Pilot Challenge. But even that team, you know, they've had two pole positions in this in the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship this season. We've had 5 different cars have won races in GTD this season. That's Acura, Lexus, BMW, Lamborghini, and Ferrari. So not on that list is Porsche, which is still in contention to, you know, not out of contention to win the overall championship, with Ryan Hardwick and Patrick Long only 7 points behind the Acura of Barry Fahrenbach and Matt McMurray coming to this final round. But also, you know, the teams that haven't won, Porsche has had a pole and fastest lap. Mercedes and Audi have both had fastest laps during this race, during this season as well. So really, the only manufacturer that hasn't had either a win, a pole, or a fastest lap is Aston Martin. Yeah. But even the Aston Martin's been on the podium during the year. So
exactly.
It really has been a remarkable season, particularly, I think, in GT Daytona.
Yeah, I think it's 12 out of 14 OEMs across the championships have had a victory. Scott Cole. Hello, Scott. He said, I'm sure you covered it earlier, but I'm tuning in late. Have you brought a note? Have you got a late pass, really? No, it's all right, Scott. We understand. He said, who's replacing Bill Oberlin this weekend? In the GT3, the GT Daytona car, Nick Yellerly is currently flying from the UK to Florida. He'll be here later on this evening. And he should be with us either later this evening or first thing tomorrow at the track. And it is going to be Cameron Lawrence, who is in the GT4, the GS car in the Michelin Pilot Challenge. So one driver is not enough to replace Bill Oberlin. I think we knew that anyway, to be honest, if truth be told. Bill, I'm sure you'll be tuned in somewhere. Best of luck, sir. A very honourable and honest thing to do. He's been in close proximity to someone who's tested positive for COVID. Bill hasn't, but as we know, it's got a long incubation period. Bill hasn't tested positive, but the long incubation period, Bill doing the very honest and honourable thing and saying, not sure I should be in the paddock, actually. So, Bill, we hope you stay fit and well, and that you're back in a race car doing what you do very soon. Indeed. At IMSA Radio, if you've got any questions, as Scott did a moment or two ago, 6 minutes to go. Ollie Jarvis has gone to the top, Jeremy.
Indeed he has. A 148.335, so by 0.04 of a second over the Cadillac of Felipe Nasr. So super tight at the front here. We've got now the top, all 8 cars covered by just over a second. Given this is a 108 second lap at best, that's pretty tight. That's a very small margin whatsoever. As we say, that Renger van der Zande goes fast as a 148.001 in kind of a 10. So, you know, as you said, John, they're really stepping it up now in these final few minutes of this session.
Yeah, Renger, and we've mentioned this before, both Renger and Ryan Briscoe not with full drives for next year. The WTR organisation taking on one of the formerly Penske run Acura team Penske's. They'll get a couple of cars to run next year, a couple of chassis, they'll run one of them, and their driver lineup announced here earlier on this week
for Meyer Shank Racing.
No, for Wayne Taylor.
For Wayne Taylor Racing, was it?
Did you?
I missed that.
Oh, I should let you dig then. What? Maybe I'm not supposed to mention it then.
Maybe you're not supposed to mention it. I don't think I've seen that yet. Okay, I'm going to do some digging. Stand by.
Okay. Thank you. I pulled myself up there because if I've heard or seen that and I wasn't meant to, it's not my announcement to make, sure, but I thought that had been out in the clear.
I'm scrolling back through their Twitter, and I'm not seeing an announcement yet.
Okay, Jeremy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it hasn't. I don't think it's been formally announced, but I think it's been on some of the websites, probably.
Okay, maybe that's where I got it from. There's a family connection to one of the drivers. That's obvious,
that's Jordan's coming back.
That's all. Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. And I'll leave you to do some digging for the other driver. Anyway, Renger looking for a drive in next year. Ryan Briscoe we expect to be as the as no more than the endurance driver, the additional driver for the endurance race, but that hasn't been confirmed anyway. And they could still win the championship, Jeremy, of course. Those two drivers, what an odd end of the season that would be, as crowned as champions and then potentially looking for a job next year.
Yeah, quite remarkable, really, and also leading in the Michelin Endurance Cup as well by five points coming to this final round. They're 4 points ahead of Scott Dixon, but he's in the same car, so he's not going to beat the other two. But yeah, no, it's remarkable. I mean, he's done a fantastic job, I think, this season. Both of them have. Let's be honest. They've been super fast. They've been super consistent. You know, won a couple of races, and they've thoroughly earned their shot at the championships, plural.
Yeah, very good.
There's a good lap there by Sebastian Bourdais, finally, number five car. Boy, they've had a dismal season lately. It started off reasonably well. They started off with a trio of podium finishes, Sebastian Bourdais and Joao Barbosa, but since then just been slipping further and further back, and we haven't really seen this car towards the front any time since the opening part of the campaign. But Sebastian Bourdais just got second fastest with a 148.039 in car number five. He's going to come across the line again now and doesn't improve. That was 150.2, so it was that previous lap that was best for Sebastian Bourdais.
Another off track moment for the 912 Porsche, still in the hands of Lawrence Van Tur, but he has gone to the top of the pile. So it's 9-12, 9-11, 3, 24, 25, 4. And I can't make any sense of that at all. So we need some things to happen there. So Larry's been thrown at the scenery a little bit, but he's clearly quick, Jeremy Shaw. And I know they want to go out on a win this weekend.
Yeah, very much so, don't they? You're absolutely right there. And at that time, a 157.975 for Lawrence Van Tur. That compares to the fastest lap of the race that was set here in July by Nick Tandy at 157.977. So just two thousandths of a second between those two marks. So that's kind of interesting, I think. And shows that the Porsches, I think, it'll certainly be competitive. Renger van der Zande, by the way, has improved again by a significant margin now. 147.478 for Renger van der Zande, the Dutchman at the wheel of that number 10 Konica Minolta Cadillac. That lap time is just milliseconds away, six thousandths of a second away from the fastest lap record. It was set by Harry Tinknell last year in the Mazda.
As we have barely half a minute to go on this session, which has gone by in what seems like a blink of an eye. Coming to the line now, Tristan Nunes in the Mazda number 77, and he was really leaning on it through Sunset turn 17. And goes through. Did he improve? He did not, but people, Durrani did. A little bit further around the track now, people. He's down to 48.328. 47.478 for Renger van der Zander as he comes into the pits. So he will not improve on that time, but he's got half a second on the field, Jeremy. That is impressive by Renger. Checkered flag.
Yeah, that's a really good lap. Far away the best lap of the session so far. The quickest time this morning was a 149.3, so almost 2 seconds of an improvement this afternoon. I would anticipate seeing some quick lap times tonight in the cooler, slightly cooler air once the sun goes down in the night session, so we'll have to wait to see if that checkered flag is out on this session.
Well, keep an eye on Nunes, who is still out there and still going very quickly indeed, just through turn 10 and heading through the Jean de Bian S's now. Who else has just improved? Jordan Taylor improved on his last lap, so did Jesse Kron, and he'll get one more, and so did Colton Herter. So three GTLMs putting in their fastest lap last time around, and Jesse Kron has still got this lap. As if he's still got the pace in the car, in himself and in the tyres. As Nunes comes through turn 17 and steers out. So he must think he's got a chance of improving here. He'll have the Delta on the dashboard and does not improve. But Sebastian Bourdais does. Stays in second position, Jeremy, but closes that down to just a tenth and a half at the sharp end of the field.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? 147.645 then for Sebastian Bourdais, the Frenchman. He is now just 0.167 adrift of Renger van der Zander. So it's actually Cadillac 1-2-3 with Pipo Durrani in third place. The going back to July here, it was Pipo Durrani who was on the pole with a 146.7. And he also set the fastest lap of the race at 147.6. Since then, there's been no change to the bounce performance from the most recent race for the prototype cars a couple of weeks ago at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. But there have been a few tweaks since the cars raced here in July. Namely, the Acura is 10 kilos lighter than it was. The Cadillac is 15 kilos lighter than it was. The Mazda, 20 kilos lighter than it was in July. There's also been a few minor tweaks to the fuel capacity size as well. Most notably, the Cadillac has less fuel than it had back in July, and the by 3 kilos, and the Mazda has one less kilo than it had further back. The Acura has the same fuel tank capacity as back in that race earlier in the season. So it's going to be interesting to see. You know, we've seen, have we not, that each of the three prototypes seem to be pretty closely matched in terms of lap times. And we'll see what happens in terms of consistency as well.
I'm just on a phone call at the moment, Jeremy, to the IMSA technical department to see if they can BOP me down by 5 kilos. if they could just do that by diktat, that would be so much easier. Really would be so much easier. Earlier on, GTD looked like this. Lamborghini's first and second from GRT, the number 11 car, with just on a tenth from the 48 Paul Miller Racing machine. Then another quarter of a tenth further back for the Porsche from Wright Motorsports. Then a whole tenth further back, the 2M Vassar Sullivan Lexus. In fact, the second of those two, nearly another four tenths away from its teammate. Then another tenth back in the top six to the Mayerschank Racing at Acura. So that's the whole of the top six there, separated by, under a second. So we're talking about 8 tenths of a second there. And if we go on down through the top ten, Turner Motorsport, BMW, Heart of Racing, Aston Martin. At ninth for Riley Motorsports, AMG, GT3, and 10th for the Ferrari of Scuderia Corsa. And if we put all them together, they are a second away from the fastest time from the Lamborghini of GRT. In LMP2, that was they were flagged off earlier as well. GDC Miller by a handy 2.5 second margin from Tower by Starworks, the number 8 car, who had 0.2 on the PR1. Matheson, number 52, who had a second on the Inter-Europol, who had 3 seconds or thereabouts on the performance tick for those five. Sorry, I said GDC are a DPI car. So it's Tower from PR1 for Inter-Europol for performance tick. And in DPI, it's Cadillac from Conic and Minolta, the number 10, by just on a 1/10 from Bourdais in the Mustang sampling Cadillac, from another 0.5 second further back, Pete Durrani in the red and white 31 at Whelan. Then the best of the Mazdas is another 1/10 further back in fourth position. Elio Castro Neves and Simon Pagenaud brought the two Acura team Penske's in fifth and sixth. And in seventh position, Jonathan Bomarito for Mazda number 55, and then Stephen Simpson, and they're separated by under 2 seconds, 1.7 seconds. So that is free practice two for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. We'll be back later with some evening practice when the sun goes down. It gets dark, and I expect to see the majority of the feel out for most of that session. We'll have that for you live, exclusive here on RS2 IMSA Radio. For the moment, thanks to our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock Report this year, Adam, who's already scouting around to pick up some stories and some quotes from that session. And it was Jeremy Shaw who joined me, John Hangdorf, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre for that session. Tim Greer, up in London in the UK, was our producer and technical support. And of course, we thank all of our colleagues at Charlotte at NASCAR Productions for the pictures that we can see all the way around the track, and of course the technical team from IMSA led by Tyler Norling on the circuit as well. Right, time to nip off and grab something to eat, settle down, still plenty of action around the circuit, and we'll be back later on for the night session of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship for the 68th running of the Sebring Mobil 1 12 hours presented by Advance Auto Parts. Join us back here on RS2 IMSA Radio in a little while. Bye for now.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.